This is the OTB Television Network, a service of Capital District Off-Track Betting.
Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning. Welcome to this Preakness Day edition of Racing Across America. I'm Seth Merrow. Thanks for joining us today on the show. Did a couple of interviews yesterday. Caught up with Acacia Courtney. She's been at Pimlico all week as part of the team covering the lead up and including Preakness Day. She's talked to some of the players, saw some of the horses, so we got some of her thoughts. She'll come up a little bit later on. We'll be joined live in a few minutes by Jeremy Plonk, horseplayernow.com, Countdown to the Crown. We'll talk a little Preakness with Jeremy. And Jeremy, also, you can find his selections every racing day on the Keeneland website. So it's opening Saturday of the fall meet at Keeneland. We'll get some of his Keeneland thoughts as well. But we're going to kick things off. Another interview we taped yesterday. Ken McPeak has Swiss Skydiver running in the Preakness today. He also has an entrant over at Keeneland in the Breeders' Futurity. So we hit on both of those horses and more. Let's get right to it. A big show this morning. Ken McPeak up first. Happy to be joined now by trainer Ken McPeak. He has Swiss Skydiver in Saturday afternoon's Preakness Stakes. Ken, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for taking the time, and enjoy the conversation, certainly. And this is discussion of Swiss Skydiver, and I want to kind of go through some of the races that are leading up to this afternoon, because we're based up here in the Saratoga area, and we certainly took a look at that Alabama, and we're very impressed by that. We're going to take a look at the stretch run again. Swiss Skydiver is going to be the number five horse in here, getting it done pretty easily in the Alabama. Give me your impressions coming out of this Alabama, and just looking at the page, you know, as a player, probably the best race of her career from my perspective. Do you have the same thoughts on the Alabama?
Yeah, and imagine if he'd let her run the last stage of a mile. Yeah. No, you know, she did well in New York. She obviously doesn't need to take a racetrack with her or a rider. But she hit a 48-second half mile in that race, and I think that is her best race. And I did tell the rider in that case, look, try to hit 48. I'm not worried about who's in front of her or who's behind her. I'm worried about what kind of rhythm she gets into. And don't force anything. Just let her just get in nice rhythm. 48, and then from there you can do whatever you want.
And again, she looked very impressive there. That leads her into the Kentucky Oaks. We're going to watch the stretch run of that. Swiss Skydiver is going to be the number one horse. She Dares the Devil, the number seven. So there's a little bit of an upset there coming out of the big performance in the Alabama. What was your takeaway from this Kentucky Oaks?
Well, we talked for 3 days that Gamine hasn't had a tendency to get off the rail when she straightened up. So for me, it was pretty easy. We drew the inside. Let's just stay inside. And once they straighten up, Gamine, once they give her a head, she always drifts. And I said, just stay in the pocket, wait, and don't move. Just go right up the inside. And for whatever reason, he didn't. And I think we win the race if we stay inside. You know, how much ground did it cost her? Hard to say. You know, you can't unring a bell, but she was second. So it was a little frustrating for me and the owner, because he knew the plan too, and it just didn't unfold that way. And she ran a respectable race. It's just she didn't get the big prize.
Yeah, again, coming out of the Alabama, high expectations from the Saratoga folks, certainly, and she winds up second in there. But I was standing outside the winner's circle when you were down for the Alabama, and there was the discussion of meeting the boys somewhere down the road, and you wind up in the Preakness. But I also wanted to get a look in your comments going back to the Bluegrass, because she had faced the boys before in a very nice performance running second to Art Collector. Art Collector here on the replay will be the number 3 horse, Swiss Skydiver the number 7 horse. So again, given that she's faced the boys before and a really nice performance here, I think that had to give you confidence coming into this weekend, I'm assuming.
Well, we had a tough decision to make on the next start for her. There wasn't a 3-year-old filly race on the calendar, a grade one, certainly. There was plenty of grade twos and threes, but no grade one. And because she's already accomplished the grade one this year, we didn't feel like regressing to a grade two was a good idea. Those can be tough as well. And then we could have run in a grade one 3-year-old filly turf race, which is QB2, or we could have run in the Spinster at Keeneland, which ended up being a short field, actually kind of a modest field. And we didn't feel like we needed to take on older fillies right away. And the lure of the Preakness, which was a lot more money and certainly the biggest prize trophy in racing. And Peter Callahan and I are both what I'd call swing high and hard kind of guys. You know, the Spencer's not a bad race, but there's nothing like the Preakness. And you don't get a window of time to run against straight 3-year-olds. So here we are.
When did you make the decision? Because I know it was probably not more than a week ago from the articles I was reading. You were still kind of up in the air about it. So when did the decision-making process come down to, we're going?
Well, I was waiting to see what Tis the Law did, because I don't feel like that horse likes Churchill that much. And I thought if he ran back in the Preakness, he was a horse that I certainly have a world of respect for. And it was going to make the field that much more difficult if he ran. When he opted out, which I don't think he opted out till the 23rd or 24th of September, and we had already breezed once, then I wanted to work back. And to work back, we had Tyler come in and work her. And he just loved her breeze. He said it's the best she's ever felt under him. And so he and I stood in my office and said, I said, what do you think? He said, she can win this race. He said, let's run her. So he and I kind of together decided we're going to go. And then that night I get told that his agent can't ride her. So that was a little bit of an eye-opener, disappointing, because we had a 2-race commitment. I'm not going to say that's the nature of the business. It's not something I've ever dealt with. But I was without a rider by Saturday night.
And you wind up with Robbie Alvarado, an experienced rider, certainly.
Yeah, you know, Robbie's been there, done that. And he gets on horses for me, or had been at Keeneland. He's a guy that I've ridden in the Preakness prior. And he's won this race on Curlin. And he's not had a top outfit recently. He needs a bit of a break to get going again. And I've seen this happen with riders for decades. I can remember when Jose Santos was on a downturn in his career and trying to find his way. And I rode him then. And I remember when Kent DeSormo was on a downturn in his career, and I rode him to help him get back going again. So it really is, you need the stock to get there, whether you're a trainer or a jockey. And in the case of Robbie, I know he's been working hard. I know he's hungry. And there's nothing better than a guy that's willing. I mean, he's been getting on her every day, and he's getting to know her. And it reminds me of when I won the Travers, because David Cohen used to get on Golden Ticket every day. and we worked together to get that colt right. And it's eerie how I think this is all going to work out. We're going to take a negative and turn it into a real big positive.
Yeah, very good. And how long has she been at Pimlico, and has she gotten a feel for the track?
She came up Tuesday. The first day we had a lot of rain. The track was sloppy when she went out. The second day it was beautiful, and she had a nice swift gallop. This morning it was sloppy again, and we went out early, and a camera crew, it walked across the racetrack while she was galloping, which I can't comprehend why anybody would have been out there, and nearly dropped Robbie. I mean, it spooked her and him. And but anyway, she got through that. She went around them and finished her gallop out. But that was a little bit eerie. But she likes to go out early in the morning. She's one that just you can't wait till 9 o'clock to take her out. She wants to go out at 5:30, 6, go in, out, bathe, rest, and then eat, which she's great at.
Yeah, and I've heard some of your interviews, and I wanted to ask about that because you look down the past performances, and she's just been bouncing around the country, various tracks. I mean, you look in 2020, Tampa, Fairgrounds, Gulfstream, Oaklawn, Santa Anita, Keeneland, Saratoga, Churchill, and now Pimlico. But you say none the worse for wear and gets into the feed tub with enthusiasm.
I say that there's only two others that eat better than her at Churchill Downs. You know who they are?
I don't.
Me and Dale Roman.
Very good. Very good.
Dale's a buddy of mine too. He'd laugh. Yeah. So, we're all good doers. She loves to eat. That's been the difference on the season, is that you can't do this with a horse that wilts on you. And she just seems to get stronger, and she loves what she does, and she doesn't easily stress. And she obviously has her blood work's always good. She just is real sturdy. She's almost a throwback type. And I do think you've got to make a case for her being one of the Horse of the Year candidates. I mean, she's gone all year long. She hasn't missed a dance. She's entertained horse racing fans from coast to coast, north, south, you name it. And I think those that when they consider that, and especially if she were to win this race this weekend, and we feel like she will, if she were to win this race this weekend, you've got to make a big case for being Horse of the Year.
Yeah, I mean, I named the tracks, but for folks who don't remember, that includes the Fantasy down at Oaklawn. She won the Santa Anita Oaks, obviously the Alabama up here. So it's been a really nice resume in 2020, no doubt about that. I've also heard some of the interviews you've done. You talk about her as compared to some of the boys in the race and say she maybe has 100 pounds on some of them.
Oh, yeah, she's big filly. I mean, she's weighed in at some points 1,100 pounds. I mean, I don't know how some of the others weigh in at, but if they were boxers, she'd be definitely bigger and stronger than them.
Very good. And you've also commented, I heard Pimlico's simulcast signal yesterday ran an interview with you, and you mentioned how smart she is. And I'm always curious when trainers say things like that, how does that manifest itself to you as a trainer when you have a horse and they come into the barn and you stand back and label one as smart? What are they doing to demonstrate that?
Well, aware of their surroundings, their eyesight, their perception of things going on around. I mean, she's very perceptive, inquisitive. She's checking things out all the time. Her ears are up, and she's got a keen eye. It reminds me, Harlan's Holiday was one of the smartest horses that I've ever trained. You may have remembered him. Of course, he's the grandsire of Authentic. And Harlan's Holiday, I don't believe he was the most talented horse I ever trained, but he was the smartest horse, the smartest. And he understood his task, and he was very talented. And you put those things together, and it makes a horse trainer's job quite easy.
And getting into that, the smart, and as I've talked to people who participate in the sales, and you do that also, and I will congratulate you again with Swiss Skydiver. I mean, $35,000 paid for this horse that's won well over $1 million now. And I know Harold Lerner, we've had him on the show up at Saratoga, and you had Eskimo Kisses with him, won the Alabama with that one. But you say smart is shown by awareness, and from talking to people who go to these sales, yearlings or two-year-old sales, they have noted they look for a lot of times not just the physicality, but they want that from a horse as well, a horse that's kind of aware and curious and the head's out of the stall looking around and checking things out. When you go to the sales, are you looking for that kind of awareness as well?
Well, there's a list of things you look for, and I'm a hip man. I mean, the way a horse is made,
the way they walk, the way that they're balanced, they have great balance, good horses do, the power of their shoulder, the length of their neck, and certainly their head and their eye, all that's got to come together. So there's a lot of factors, how they're bred, but I love doing that. Wait till we win the Alcibiades, say, for Harold Lerner with that $50,000 New York bred by Lau Ban. Simply ravishing.
Ah, nice. And we are recording on Friday, and so you have some in the Alcibiades. And first, let me just offer you a good luck and a great run on Saturday in the Preakness with Swiss Skydiver. But I do want to shift to Saturday at Keeneland because you have one coming up in the Breeders' Futurity as well. Hopefully, it'll add to your resume over the weekend. As you say, you have some coming up Friday in the Alcibiades, but in the Breeders' Futurity, you have King Fury in here. King Fury is going to be the number 10 horse in this replay we look at. Career debut, maiden special weight victory over at Churchill. Again, the number 10 horse, the chart margin is just under 3 lengths. This was a pretty good-looking debut. Corey Landry will be on board on Saturday. Give me your thoughts on the first start of the career for King Fury, which, again, this nice win we're looking at, and how this one is coming into the Breeders' Futurity at Keeneland on Saturday.
Exceptionally talented colt. You know, I don't want him to pigeonhole me as a filly trainer only, right? No, he is really, really, and seems to be improving, and he wasn't cheap, this horse. He was probably, he's the most expensive young horse I've ever bought. And real excited about him. And 12 to 1 is ridiculous. I can't even comprehend why he's 12 to 1. But he's going to give us a big thrill. This horse has got a, like I say, big future and beautiful horse to look at. And for him to go up that long, everybody ought to take those numbers.
I was going to ask you about that, the morning line. I thought that was a little steep myself, particularly the nice breeding, curling out of Taurus. So there was some breeding there. But I'm assuming this one had to look great at the sale because, as you say, it attracted just under $1 million.
Yeah, I think Battaglia, if he set this line, he might have been drunk when he did it. He's a friend of mine. I can tell him that to his face.
As I say, it looked a little generous. Given, you know, I'm a buyer guy, and I suppose folks are looking at the buyers, but these two-year-olds can step it up all the time. And that win was just visually enough that, yeah, that 12-1 looks a little generous. I'm going to be interested to see where the betting public goes. I'll be on it at 12-1 if that's the actual price. But yeah. You're going into the race, the stake race tomorrow with this one with some confidence.
Oh, yeah. No, like I said, he's a very, very good horse. And matter of fact, don't be surprised in May you'll be talking about this horse.
Ah, nice, very good. Ken, appreciate the conversation. Again, wish you good luck in the Breeders' Futurity at Keeneland on Saturday afternoon, but certainly with Swiss Skydiver in the Preakness. It's fun that you're taking the shot. Always fun to see a filly in one of these races. And Swiss Skydiver, for us up here in the Saratoga area, we're rooting just because you like to root for the horses that did well up here. And she really looked great in the Alabama. So, again, thanks for the time. Appreciate it. And good luck on Saturday.
Thank you, sir. Take care.
Appreciate it. Ken McPeak, Swiss Skydiver in the Preakness on Saturday. Yeah, and thanks to Kenny McPeak for taking the time. Again, we recorded that yesterday, and he touted Simply Ravishing, and obviously being recorded yesterday, I took advantage of that. If you watched OTB Live yesterday afternoon, as we were live on the air in the afternoon, I mentioned that we had recorded Kenny, and he really liked the Harold Lerner-owned Simply Ravishing in the Alcibiades yesterday, so hopefully people were able to catch on to that a little bit. We'll see how King Fury does today at Keeneland in the Breeders' Futurity, and also Swiss Skydiver in the Preakness. And speaking Preakness, I said at the top of the show, Triple Crown race means a visit from Jeremy Plonk. Countdown to the Crown, horseplayernow.com. It's a little bit of a different year. We're not usually having this conversation in October, but Jeremy, good morning.
Good morning, and I wish I would have seen that yesterday because I bet the other McPeak in the Alcibiades. So I need to rewind the tape and get with the program.
Yeah, he made a real point of mentioning, because I brought up Harold Lerner and Eskimo Kisses a few years ago in the Alabama, and he said, I got a good one for Harold coming up in the Alcibiades. So as I say, yesterday afternoon, I kind of tossed that out for the viewers, knowing they wouldn't see it until this morning. But Swiss Skydiver in the Preakness this afternoon. I pulled up, and let's tout it a little bit. Countdown to the Crown, latest edition came out yesterday. If people go to the website, they can find it, horseplayernow.com. You type Countdown to the Crown, Horseplayer Now, into Google, you can find it. But I pulled up the latest edition, and you commented, and I talked about it with Kenny. How about that schedule that Swiss Skydiver has had this year with the number of tracks and cross-country trips, and has held up throughout the entire year?
I've tried to, like, you know, mentally go back. I pride myself as being a bit of a historian and geek in racing. I'm trying to figure out a campaign similar to this one. There's not many. You almost kind of go back to Cigar when he's bouncing around, like, from the Don to the Mass Cap to Del Mar, you know? I mean, he was, like, all over the country. You just don't see three-year-old fillies, you know, run at Gulfstream, Santa Anita, Oaklawn, Fairgrounds, you know, then up to Saratoga, the Kentucky Oaks. Well, what an ambitious schedule. And when she gets through this, she'll still have the Breeders' Cup Distaff ahead of her. And she could be awfully tough in there, too, with that division, you know, losing a Midnight Bisou this week. So what a phenomenal year. A hat tip certainly goes to the connections there with Swiss Skydiver. And Seth, I think she's in with a chance today in the Preakness. You know, I think she's clearly the third choice in the race, whether you're talking pari-mutuel or just handicapping the past performances, right? I mean, she wasn't quite up to snuff to beat Art Collector at a mile and an eighth, and I think at a mile and 3/16, that becomes a little tougher. She's going to need Art Collector to come back to her. And then you've got Authentic, you know? And really, beyond that, if you put the rest of the race together, I think Swiss Skydiver goes as the favorite over the rest of the bunch. So she's got a shot today, and she's in a race she belongs in. I think this is good placement.
Yeah, I have her down in the lower part of my mix, but I agree. Certainly, Ken mentioned he wasn't thrilled with the ride in the Kentucky Oaks. He thought he had a real shot in there. Wound up a good second, though. But, boy, her Alabama, for those of us up at Saratoga, that was a really impressive performance. And getting back to that, and the good second in the Bluegrass Show, she can compete with the boys. She'll be a fun storyline, certainly, this afternoon in the Preakness. Before we get your thoughts specifically, though, tout us a little bit again. Countdown to the Crown came out yesterday, the nice lineup of your thoughts on the Preakness and the three-year-old season so far, and also horseplayernow.com. I know you and Brian Spencer have some selections out today. Various tracks, really great racing across the country today.
Yeah, we've got our Buzz report, and you know, it's $10 for four full cards. I took on two. I've got Keeneland, which I do every day, and then I've got Pimlico today, and then Brian took care of Santa Anita, and then he also had the action at Belmont for their big Breeders' Cup preview day. So four full cards. We try to be honest and put out a good effort, and we hope you enjoy it for $10. Check that out at Horseplayer Now, the Buzz report. And you know, of course, we'll count down to the Crown. It's season 15. I started this series in 2006. We're wrapping up season 15 with just, what, 3 months until season 16 starts? I mean, it's like these are just kind of 2 months. Oh, my God, it's October already. There's like 2 months. I've got November and December off. I get 2 months off before we start it all again on the first Friday of January every year. So, you know, and one of the amazing things about it is when you talk about Authentic, he was one of those early season horses, right? I mean, when he came out of the Sham, you're like, okay, this is a pretty good Baffert early on. Let's see what else he comes up with. At the end of the line, he's still here. And that's pretty impressive, you know. And it wasn't without some blips in the road, right? I think Bob lost confidence in him. A lot of handicappers lost confidence in him. He looked like he was going the wrong way. Had this Derby been in May, I think he's probably a horse who would not have been a win contender. The fact that it was pushed back, Bob was able to get him back on the beam and get him right again. And now he's got a chance to win 2/3 of the Triple Crown and maybe wrest away the three-year-old championship. It might be hard to deny him if he wins this race.
Yeah, certainly a win today moves him squarely into a tie or maybe even a little bit above with a couple of classic wins, Tis the Law, as far as the three-year-old scene. Right. And then it all plays out at the Breeders' Cup, perhaps. But let's get into it. Let's talk Preakness specifically. When we had Kenny on, we showed the Swiss Skydiver race, a series of her races. A little bit later on, I taped an interview with Acacia Courtney down at Pimlico, and we have a replay of Authentic in the Derby, so folks will get to see that. But I'm going to pull up a replay of the horse. On the Buzz report, you have this horse as an exotics contender. I'm taking a pop with Pneumatic, so I wanted folks to see the race at Monmouth. Pneumatic here is going to be the number five horse over Jesus's team in the Pegasus at Monmouth, middle of August. I think the pace scenario, you know, I admit I'm taking a little shot in here, but I'm hoping Authentic has a little company, maybe with Art Collector, maybe with Thousand Words, maybe even Swiss Skydiver pushing, and Pneumatic can kind of sit and stock and maybe make the most of that scenario this afternoon. Going to shop for a little bit of a price in here, but I have Pneumatic over Authentic, over Art Collector, over Swiss Skydiver. That's the way I see it. What are your thoughts on the Preakness?
Well, I like your guts. I mean, you're taking a step out there and trying to beat those three, and there's nothing wrong with that at any point in time. Pneumatic is a horse who has a really nice short burst in him. You know, he's kind of like one of those turf miler types. It's got a good turn of foot, you know, for 2-3 furlongs. That's his race. It's got to be timed right. The thing has to set up right. If you watched his Belmont Stakes, I thought he was the long shot sneaky horse to give Tiz the Law a shot and the exacto horse in the Belmont. And I got up out of my seat, you know, watching the race on the couch, and I rose up at the quarter pole thinking, here he comes. This is all coming together. And then he kind of flattened out. So he kind of moved a little bit too early in that race. It'll be interesting to see in this race how the pace unfolds. It's a very difficult pace in the Preakness to project. I mean, we know Authentic wants to go to the front. Then there's 3-4 horses that might want to go to the front. And jockey intent and how they break and, you know, Authentic didn't get away great in the Derby, but then he kind of, you know, scooted and motored and got to the front by the time they passed the wire the first time. Will that work at Pimlico? We'll see, you know, and how it all plays out. If they do bang and smash and go fast early, for Pneumatic, he's better to be farther back than you might think because he's just got that one run in him, I believe. So if they're going fast and he's up there chasing fast, I don't think he can sustain that kind of run. So he's better off being 6, 8, 10 lengths off the lead if they're going fast. And then just make your one run from the 3-furlong marker to the wire. That's your best shot from off the pace, I think, in this kind of race. You know, you're asking for 3 quality speed horses all to back up, but let's see what happens. You know, I mean, you're going to get a horse in the exotics at some point in here, I think. You know, looking back at it, in the last 15 years of the Preakness, 8 times we've had a horse 25 to 1 or more in the Super, and we've had horses in the trifecta in 6 of those 15 years at 25 to 1 or more. You know, you just go back to last year, you know, you had the Big Bomber in 6. Second that nobody could come up with. You know, I've had some luck with horses like Cherry Wine, Senior Investment. Those were my, like, big underneath horses that helped get me some prices. Bravazo a couple years ago, you know, behind Justify, helping the exact. So even though the Preakness is a very formful race, favorites have won this race 51% of the time in history. And we've only had, this is unbelievable to me, 2 20-to-1 winners in the history of the Preakness. 2 horses at 20 to 1 or more, and only 4 horses at 15 to 1 or more. So it doesn't happen on the top end that we get just this crazy boxcars. But if you have a good long shot that you like, work them in underneath, second, third, fourth. And if you do want to play a win bet, look, the last thing you want is to have a horse you like Pneumatic, right? The last thing you want to have is this horse wins and I get nothing on him. But if you're going to spend $50 on the race, maybe 10 of it is on the win end, and then the other 40 is using the horse second and third. I think that's a better way of moving your money around and maximizing what's more likely to happen. But if this horse wins, you don't want to be standing there going, oh, boy, I didn't get it, you know? I mean, there's not many opportunities in life to have a horse you really like in a big race at a big price. So you got to get something on the win end. But, you know, if people balance their money right, I think the Preakness is a race where you can still make some big scores. I mean, that Justified Bravazo just – I cleaned up that day, and it was a 3-to-5 shot winning, you know? So if you have the right opinion underneath, you can do it.
Yeah, and I'm looking at Countdown to the Crown, and I'm seeing you like Authentic and Art Collector. And again, I may be on the outside looking in with the shot on Pneumatic. Authentic looked great in the Derby. And Art Collector, I'm excited to see, because it was unfortunate they had the ding and couldn't make the Derby. I'm really excited to see what he does. But it looks like in the underneath slot, the horse you're going to take that pop with is Live Your Beast Life from local owner Bill Lawrence, George Abreu, coming off a nice second in the Jim Dandy last time. Talk a little bit about that long shot.
He got a big, brisk, late pace figure, and so we're looking for a horse to finish, right? All the major contenders in this race have tactical speed or just flat-out speed. So if you're going to get in there and kind of bust up the party, you're probably coming from the clouds, and that's what I'm thinking. He's not a horse who's like 25 out of it, but he's a finisher, and I want a finisher, and I like that late pace figure. He's also by Ghost Zapper. Ghost Zapper gets about 20-21% winners on the dirt at Pimlico, a really strong rate with a positive ROI. So there's a little pedigree angle in there and a finisher, and we're looking for a price, right? I mean, when you go back and you look at the Preakness and you say Senior Investment was not one of the top 3 3-year-olds that year. Cherry Wine was not, you know, those kind of horses like that. Mr. Freeze, but they get in there, and that's what we're looking for here. And we're looking for a horse to get in. What we see in the Derby is the same sort of thing happen, right? The long shots who get a piece, Mr. Big News was this year's representative in that group. But those long shots who run well in the Derby, never, and I mean never, you can go back and look at the history, they never come back and repeat it in the Preakness. So for Mr. Big News to be that same, you say, well, why wouldn't you just take him right back? Lightning doesn't strike twice in these two races historically. Now, it's a little bit different this year, different time of the year, more time between the races. But still, I think you're looking for a price horse. I have no problem at all with Pneumatic being the one that you're taking. I'm taking Live Your Beast Life, kind of similar, you know, similar deals. They're not going to be 25 out of it, but I think if they're 8-10 lengths out of it and they're going fast and they each make their run, those are two of the major contenders who can finish in the top three. And that's what you're going to need here, right? I mean, and the way you're betting this race for me is, you know, we're going to heavily use that horse second and third with the logicals. I will say this. I really thought Authentic was a standout in this race like 10 days ago. Then the post-draw made me start to say, wow, there's a little more speed. And Swiss Skydiver came into the race. NY Traffic came back into the race. It looked like, okay, he's not a 4-5 shot now. Now he's up to 7-5, 8-5. Then I watched the gallops for Art Collector the last couple days at Pimlico. XBTV and the people on the ground at Pimlico did a great job of gathering video. You know, we talk about workout videos and things like that. We study those all the time. But just the mere gallops, Art Collector looks full of himself. I mean, he looks great on video right now. He was bet the 4-5 in the early wagering yesterday, which is insane. So when the tote opens for the Preakness today, he's 4-5. I don't think it's going to stay that way. The Derby winner has been the favorite in the Preakness 14 of the last 18 years. People bet the Derby winner back. It's Bob Baffert. They've got to bet Authentic, right? I mean, that price doesn't stay the way that it is now. Authentic is 5-1 after the wagering yesterday. That's going to change. But he's not going to be 4-5 like I thought he was going to be 10 days ago, because there's enough Art Collector momentum and reason to like him, not just hype, that I think you're looking at probably like 8-5 and 2-1. And when you have 8-5 and 2-1 in an 11-horse field, that means everybody else is really up there, you know? Maybe 8-1, 10-1 on Swiss Skydiver is the third choice, and everybody else is going to be balloons.
Yeah, it's, as I say, Swiss Skydiver, nice little storyline, but Art Collector becomes a nice storyline. The connections, they get a big horse like this, fun to root for. And it's going to be an interesting edition of the Preakness today on a stakes-laden card. But speaking of stakes-laden card, I said top of the show when I kind of touted your coming on, we'll talk a little Preakness, obviously, with Countdown to the Crown and whatnot. But when a Keeneland season rolls around, if folks go to the Keeneland website, they can find your selections every day there. So I thought we'd talk a little Keeneland as well on their first Saturday. Sure. Let's hop over to Keeneland. The feature today, and again, a stakes-laden card, and we'll hit on a few others as well. But we'll start with the feature, the Shadwell Turf Mile Grade 1 event, at as the name suggests, a mile on the grass. I pulled up the four-star Dave from Saratoga, August 22nd. Halliday, the number 5, wins. Scott Stormy, the number 4, runs second. Casa Creed from Lee Einsiedler, the number 2, runs third. Without Parole is going to be the number 8 horse, winding up 6th in this race. Halliday, Casa Creed, 1st, 3rd, and 6th Without Parole are all coming back on Saturday afternoon in the Shadwell Turf Mile and seem to be solid contenders, certainly. Raging Bull and Flavius both show up from Chad Brown and also will be players in here. What are your thoughts on the Shadwell?
You know, I think you've got the right race that you're looking at. You know, the four-star Dave has been a very predictive race towards this Shadwell mile in the past. The horse is on a slight cutback from a mile and a 16th, the milers, the mile and an 8th. The little bit of a cutback has really helped in the Shadwell mile historically, and horses coming from Saratoga. So I think you've got the right runners coming out of the right field in there. And I'm going to give Without Parole another shot back. You know, I think he's a horse that didn't fire his best shot that day, but on his best, I think he's better than most of these, and he's a good finisher on his best day. Halliday's going to try to take him wire to wire. He's been a beneficiary of some pretty soft paces this year. The Shadwell Mile is not a race historically that's wired. You got to go back to Thornsong, I believe 2008 or 2009, to find the last wire-to-wire winner of this race. And I'm going with Without Parole. It's surprising that, you know, Chad Brown's got a slew in here, but this isn't a race he's won yet, and it's grade one, but I think he's going to have success here. He's got too many good bullets to fire. Halliday should get a little bit of pressure from the outside runner in here. So, who's a little bit underclassed, but I think that's going to be enough pace pressure to turn the tables of what we saw in the four-star Dave. So I'm going to take Without Parole, Raging Bull, the other one for Chad Brown. Analyze it's getting some buzz and hype, and I think Analyze it's going to be a little bit too close to the pace compared to those others. I think you win this race from farther back.
Yeah, as you say, analyze it from Chad Brown in here as well. Chad with a number of horses, including Without Parole. And I'm looking in morning line. I'm guessing Without Parole would technically be the other of the uncoupled runners in here, being the longest price. And that's always an interesting angle to take a look at as well. Let's go a little earlier on the card, Breeders' Futurity. As I said, Kenny McPeak has King Fury in here off a maiden debut victory over a Churchill that looked pretty good. But I'm going to pull up another maiden debut winner, this one up at Saratoga, August 15th. It's going to be the number six in here, Calibrate, for Steve Asmussen. We were talking on the handicapping show earlier, 7-2 on the morning line, but I said I think bettors are just so keyed into buyer figures. I'm going to be interested to see where Calibrate goes as they go into the gate, because I think he may take more action than that. But Essential Quality off the nice debut win, Founder off the nice debut win, also look to be attractive to the betting public. What do you see in the Breeders' Futurity?
This is a race that on paper looks very competitive, and there's, you know, a limited amount of races you get to look at, and there's a lot of promise amongst those. You know, King Fury won from a really bad post at Churchill Downs, looked good doing it, has the route experience. Founder really ran a nice race, no question about that. Calibrate ran a really nice race down on the rail in his game in his debut and looked really good for Steve. But in video study, Seth, I could not have been more impressed than I was with Essential Quality. This is my best bet of the weekend at Keeneland. If you like to watch race replays, go watch this horse's debut. The first 3, 4, or 5 furlongs of the race, he was just kind of climbing and galloping along down the backstretch. Looked like he didn't know what he was doing. In the middle of the stretch, the light bulb came on, and he got absolutely squeezed, played by two horses, not one, but two, into the rail. He got around both of those, came out, and ran about the last 100 yards of the race like a jackrabbit, and then galloped out like the race was just beginning. He was 25 lengths in front on the clubhouse turn in the gallop out. This was a 6-furlong sprint. His mama was a sprinter. He's got some, you know, distance on the top of the pedigree. The question is, will he two turn? I'm not sure after the debut, but I know he's super talented. The way he finished up and went through the wire for Brad Cox, he really, really impressed me. Essential Quality to me is a big play today, and I'm going to actually make him a single in the multi-race wagers, and I'm going to try to build my pick fours and pick fives late in the day today in Keeneland off of Essential Quality. I do not know what the public's going to do with this race. I think you're right. I mean, I think Calibrate's going to take action. Founder for Chad has got to get bet right. I mean, he bolted and took a right-hand turn at the 16th pole, regrouped, and came back to win. I mean, he could have been more visually impressive. And the way Kenny dominated yesterday, people have short-term memories with the two-year-olds. He comes back with King Fury, who looks really good. He's going to get bet off the success of yesterday and as good as he looked in his debut. So these all horses look to be in that 2-1 to 4-1 range, and I don't know which way the public's going to sort with them. But I am just stoutly behind Essential Quality today.
I like it. All right, let's get one more opinion. We'll go back to the sixth race this afternoon at Keeneland, the Woodford Grade 2 event for turf sprinters. And this is a nice field. Leinster certainly will attract some attention off the nice win earlier this year at Keeneland in that re-calendar July meet they had. But it was a nice triple-digit win. Chaos Theory coming off a couple of wins is interesting to me as well for John Sadler. Who'd you see in the Woodford?
You know, Sadler's horse looks good on paper, but he has been so cold in California. Yeah. Does he wake up with the road trip? For a guy who rarely wins out of town to start with, you know, he did have a little bit of success at Keeneland with the winner last year in Stakes Company. But he is ice cold. I mean, I'm talking like sub 5-6% in California over the last couple months. I've got to take a shot against that one. Two horses that really love the course. Fast Boat for Joe Sharp. Really loves this course at Keeneland. I think he's going to be overlooked and will be a nice price. And Leinster that you talked about, I think he's the horse to beat. I think there might be a little bit of like discrediting his win in the summer because that course was so fast. It's not what we're used to seeing in the spring and the summer. That people are going to think that win was fraudulent, setting a course record during a meet where I think they set 4 or 5 different turf course records. You know, it really wasn't our traditional Keeneland spring fall weather, so that course was just so much harder than it normally is. But this horse has run huge at Keeneland before that. He is truly a horse for course. He just ran faster in that race, and I think people might look at it and say, yeah, that was phony, and he's not quite as good as that. I think Leinster, the 8, and the 2-horse Fast Boat are really key plays in that race in the Woodford. And it's a good race. Extravagant Kid from the Rail is a horse I thought in the last two looked like the winner and disappointed me. So This time, I'm not going to go back to the well again. I'm steadily, you know, and strongly behind the 8 and the 2 there in the Woodford. We'll take our chances. Fastboat's going to be a nice price, and if he can get in there, I think that juices it up. I mean, that could be a $50 jacket with those two.
I like it. Again, folks can find Jeremy's selections every Keeneland Racing Day at the Keeneland website. And, of course, check out Thoughts on the Preakness at the Countdown to the Crown page. Nice sheet you can print up as well. The contenders and the long shot logicals and some three-year-old thoughts overall. Jeremy, again, appreciate the visit. And we will certainly be looking forward to starting out Countdown to the Crown in a couple of months for next year, as you said.
Yeah, I'll be getting right on that. It's coming up.
But appreciate the visit this morning. Again, kind of wrapping up a very different 2020 Triple Crown, but also the thoughts on Keeneland. And, in fact, maybe we'll check in again before the end of this Keeneland meet.
I'd love to. Anything you need.
All right. Jeremy Plonk, horseplayernow.com, Countdown to the Crown. Some Keeneland thoughts and some Preakness thoughts as well. And I'll just check with the guys in the control room. Should we just fire up the next interview? Yes?
Sure.
Yeah. Just to save some time, we will go right into the Acacia Courtney interview, which, again, I taped yesterday. She's been part of that team all week long that's been leading up to the Preakness. She will, of course, be part of the simulcast team today as well. But caught up with her yesterday, and, you know, she's been on the backstretch talking to the players and seeing the horses run. So we got some thoughts on the Preakness and a couple other stakes today at Pimlico with Acacia Courtney. She's up next. Our friend Acacia Courtney, she's part of the team covering Preakness Week down at Pimlico. Acacia, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. Thanks for having me on. Hope you're doing well.
Happy to have you on, and so far so good. Yes, knock on wood, doing well up here after a quirky Saratoga. We've been watching you on the broadcast as well, based down at Belmont, but now you're at Pimlico. I've been looking at your Twitter feed, and I see you've been kind of bouncing around the backstretch as well. I'm curious, on these, you know, Triple Crown Trail races, typically, it's a little bit different this year, but typically still there's kind of a buzz horse that may be floating around on the backstretch. Any buzz on a horse this week coming into the Preakness?
I think the biggest buzz horse is Art Collector. He's really impressed in the mornings the whole week. I've been doing kind of all of the roles this week since coming to Maryland. I've been out starting at about 4:45 in the morning spotting horses for our camera team, and I've been on the radio doing that. So I've gotten a chance to see them all up close and personal. And then, of course, doing the handicapping and the on-air reporting stuff, and also working on the production end of everything. So I've been doing it all this week, but it's been a lot of fun. And our camera guys, myself, a lot of people on the backside have really just been super impressed by what Art Collector's been doing in the mornings. Just really seems unfazed by everything.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing him. I was disappointed for, you know, you get connections like that and wind up with a horse like this and they miss the Derby. But have you had a chance to talk to Tom Drury? I'm sure that these guys are over the moon to have a shot at a classic.
I did. I got a chance to speak to Tom Drury and Bruce Lunsford, the owner, this morning. They just got into town yesterday. So Art Collector has been here, obviously, since Tuesday when all the horses came in on the plane from Kentucky, and just got a chance to speak to him. Of course, you know, his team has been here with Art Collector, but he said it's really just been emotional. He said he's still kind of getting over the Bluegrass victory, which was the first graded stakes win for him, and then to be able to potentially have a big shot in a race like the Preakness is huge. Not to mention, he said, with the disappointment of not being able to run in the Kentucky Derby, having the Preakness just a month after was really the saving grace to have something to look forward to.
Yeah, it's, as I say, fun to root for connections like that, and I'm glad they're getting a shot in the Preakness. Just before we get to some of the stakes on Saturday afternoon, just give us your thoughts and what it's like down there. I'm sure it's pretty similar to what the way Belmont has played out over the past few months and the way Saratoga's played out. A fanless Pimlico, what's it been like the last couple days?
Yeah, it's definitely bittersweet. And like I always say, I mean, believe me, all of us that are here at the racetrack want the fans back just as much as they want to be back on the track. It's you miss that buzz, that atmosphere, that excitement of 100,000 people lined up on the rail trying to get a look at these amazing thoroughbreds. And it's a fabulous race. It's a great card. So it is a shame, but we will have a limited number of owners here. Of course, essential personnel, very limited number of media on track here, and tremendous safety precautions in place. So everybody's taking things seriously and doing everything that we need to do in order to keep racing. So it is bittersweet, but I know the Stronach Group's put a lot of emphasis on still making it a great experience for those watching at home. Did a segment with some people from the Stronach Group last night, and the Soulful Symphony Orchestra will still be performing in the infield and doing kind of a modernized call to post type of thing. So still some nice fun things for people that are watching at home.
Very good, very good. And I saw, you know, as you say, the horses have arrived. I saw on the card yesterday as we were in doing the handicapping show on Thursday afternoon, I saw John Velasquez get interviewed in the Winner's Circle afterwards. So he's already in town, and it sounded like he came in town a little bit early. He wanted to get a feel for the track before he hops on board Authentic.
He did. He had a very nice win yesterday on Yopon in the Grade 3 Chick Lang for Steve Asperson, who looks like he's going to be now pointed towards the Breeders' Cup Sprint, which I think is exciting given the fact that Volatile was recently retired and Yopon still undefeated with a big performance yesterday. So John Velasquez already a win. I spoke to Gabe Saez yesterday too. He won a stake at Pimlico and he's in town to ride Mr. Big News. So a few jockeys have gotten in early to kind of get acclimated, especially for those traveling out of town. Like I said, there are restrictions as far as being able to produce negative COVID tests and just coming in to get settled. So a few jockeys in town already who'll be riding the Preakness, and four local Maryland jockeys who'll be riding in the Preakness this year as well.
And you mentioned Yopon. I'm glad you brought that up, because when that race came under the wire, I said it's like an assembly line in that Asmussen barn. Matoli, Volatile, and now Yopon, who just looked fabulous again yesterday.
A really impressive run. And I mean, Steve Asmussen, as we know, is great training for a lot of different types of races, but it seems like with those dirt sprinters, he just has the special touch.
Yeah, it's just been, an incredible little assembly line over the past couple of years. All right, let's jump into it and get some thoughts on some of the stakes on Saturday afternoon. We'll start things out with the highlight, the Preakness. I pulled up the replay of the Kentucky Downs to take a look at Authentic, the number 18, top of the stretch. You know, we're homers up here, and we were kind of rooting for Tis the Law, particularly after the big Travers win. And at the top of the stretch, you thought Tis the Law was going to blow right on by, but Authentic, given the pace scenario early, had something left and pulls away and gets it done by a chart margin of a little over a length. Tis the Law ran a good race. He just ran into a better horse on Kentucky Derby Day. I'm going to take a little pop against Authentic. I think there's a lot of speed in this race that may set it up for him to be a little softened as they hit the top of the stretch. At least that's what I'm hoping. I don't know if that's how it'll work out, but I'm going to take a little shot with a pneumatic. The Asmussen runner coming in off a win in the Pegasus at Monmouth, and hope maybe that one can kind of sit a little stalking trip and make a big move. As I say, I may be up against it there, because I think Authentic and Art Collector are legitimate, and it'll be fun to see if they happen to do square off at the top of the stretch. But what are your thoughts on the Preakness?
Well, I agree with you. I think that Authentic is far and above the horse to beat. I don't think he's a horse that has to win type of situation. Being able to see him in the mornings, as he's been based out in California, so I haven't really been able to see him leading up to this. But he's a little bit of a tricky horse. I know 1,000 Words was the one that flipped in the paddock before the Kentucky Derby for Bob Baffer, but Authentic's the one that's more difficult, and Bob had even told me that over the training over the last couple of days. The exercise rider in Authentic has been getting his arm workout in the morning, because he's very keen. He's a very tough, he's a very strong, a very almost kind of distracted type of horse. And so kudos certainly to Bob Baffert for being able to go the mile and a quarter in the Kentucky Derby, as he really was just best that day. The track here at Pimlico, especially as we did have some rain last night and on Wednesday as well, typically having early speed, being forwardly placed, is a big advantage. So I think it really does hinder some of the deep, deep closers, though there does seem to be a lot of speed. But I agree with you. I think of the three Asmussen runners, Pneumatic is the one that's been impressing me the most, and he's coming in fresh from the Pegasus at Monmouth. But I landed on Art Collector. And like I said, he's really just won me over. He will have to work out a trip from being drawn more towards the inside versus Authentic more outside with the speed. But I think that he's just coming in so impressively. I've loved his attitude in the morning, and he really seems to skip over the track beautifully.
Nice. And like I say, those connections would be easy to root for. So we'll see what happens on Saturday afternoon in the Preakness. That's the three-year-old boys. The three-year-old girls, as usual, face off in the Black Eyed Susan on Preakness weekend. That's a race earlier. I'm going to use Bonnie South coming out of the second in the Alabama. I thought, you know, that was a good effort behind Swiss Skydiver, who is also going to be interesting in the Preakness. She's going to be fun to watch in the big race. But Bonnie South on that second in the Alabama. Hopeful Growth is interesting to me. Mizzen Bow and maybe a little bit of a price coming down from Woodbine. I think it's an interesting race. What are your thoughts on the Black Eyed Susan?
It is, and we're kind of on the same page here, too. I thought I was being cute. I'm going to go slightly against Bonnie South again. I think that she's just the one to beat, and she will be very tough. But trying to get a bit of a better price, I did land on Hopeful Growth. I got to see her a few months back down at Gulfstream and just watching her last few races. She seems like she's really kind of developed now into the latter part of her three-year-old season, and I think that that is one of the kind of silver linings about the timing of the Preakness and the Black Eyed Susan this year is that some of those later developing horses have another chance, and I think Hopeful Growth is going to sit a great trip in there. So she's the one I'm most interested in at potentially a bit of a price. And at a big price, I'm also going to be using Dream Marie. She was disappointing last time out, but she's reuniting with Joe Bravo, and all of her races prior to that, she just runs every time. She's a huge overachiever, and I don't know if she's a win candidate, but she'll be a big price, and she's definitely one I think is worth using underneath.
Yeah, I looked at her, and certainly the promise earlier this year, I just thought, I'm a buyer's guy. That's a tool in my toolbox, and the numbers were a little light, but I think you'll get the odds to take the shot if you do like the horse. And we mentioned Swiss Skydiver because of the win in the Alabama where Bonnie South finished second. What are your thoughts on Swiss Skydiver and the Preakness?
I mean, look, she's looked fantastic in the morning. Some Ken McPeak has been her hot walker this week as everybody's kind of, short on staff members. And she's been dragging him around the shed row. And it's been really cool to see. And I think it's great sportsmanship. We know there Ken McPeak is not afraid to take a shot. And he's in with a fantastic filly. She looks like a colt as well. And she's just kept her condition up. She's got a really tough field to run against. But definitely rooting for her. And honestly, she's done nothing wrong. Leading up to the race.
Yeah, it looked great up here in the Alabama, certainly. All right, let's go to the James Murphy, a race before the Black Eyed Susan. $100,000 up for grabs, a mile on the grass. I tilted towards Don Juan Kitten for Danny Gargan coming out of the close-up second-place finish in the Saranac last time. Second slot, I thought, bye-bye Melvin. I didn't know what to do with this horse because that Saranac win was, I would say, the best race on the page, and it was at 19-1. Could Bye Bye Melvin come back to that? I'm not sure, but the Grand Motion trainee interests me. And Chocolate Bar on the inside was a horse that I took an extra look at as well. Monday Morning QB is interesting. Fun race, nice full field on the grass, what we always like to play. There should be some odds to chase. What are your thoughts on the Murphy?
Yeah, I actually like some of the horses coming out of the Saranac, as I'm sure you'll remember. And I was standing in the paddock for that race, so I remember it very vividly. But it started pouring right before the Saranac. So the turf was a lot softer than it may look if you're just looking on paper. And I spoke to Grand Motion afterwards with Bye Bye Melvin, and he's a cool horse. He's the half-brother to Mean Mary, who's multiple graded stakes winner, just missing the grade one Diana for Graham as well. So after that close defeat, I know it was very validating to get her brother into the winner's circle at Saratoga. And that was his best race. I actually think that Vanzi coming out of the Saranac too will have a bigger chance this week in the Jimmy Murphy, because he stumbled at the break in the Saranac, and given how soft the turf was, given the weather condition, there was no making up ground, and he was the one I had actually liked the best in the paddock. But he stumbled coming out of the gate, did not use his typical early speed. He had really improved coming into the race, and I think was just really up against it that day. So I'm curious to see how those horses will fare coming out of that race, as we will have a turf with a little bit of give in it, given some of the rain that we've had. But it's sunny and nice out now here in Maryland. It's supposed to be beautiful all day today and beautiful all day tomorrow. So we should be in a good turf condition leading into Saturday.
I was going to ask you the weather forecast, so it's good to get an update on that. Glad we're looking at some nice weather over the weekend, because you always want as fair a surface as possible for these big three-year-old races. And just give me your thoughts before we let you go on the Triple Crown season this year and the way it played out, given the scenario. And I was thinking today as I drove in, even if things aren't back to normal by the time we get to next year, I think the Triple Crown will be the same spot on the calendar, because I think this year everybody was kind of hoping things would maybe be back to normal by the end of summer. And as it played out, that wasn't the way it worked out. And so I think that was the impetus for moving things later in the year. Now that we know the situation, I think it'll go back to normal next year. But my feeling was it played out. It was different this year, but it was still kind of fun and unique in its own way. What are your thoughts about the rejiggered Triple Crown this year?
I think first and foremost, I'm just happy that we had a Triple Crown, that we were able to have those big races, and especially being up to be able to be in Saratoga. And I mean, the Peter Pan was the opening weekend of Saratoga. The Jim Dandy was at the end. You know, everything was all kind of rescheduled in order to work around the Triple Crown races. But I think there have been some silver linings that have come out of it, too. I mentioned some of the later developing horses that have had a chance to run in races like the Preakness this weekend. For the first time, the Preakness is a win and you're in for the Breeders' Cup Classic, which I think is really cool, too, because the Haskell previously had only been the only other three-year-old race that was a win and you're in for their challenge series. And we've got some top-class horses running here. The Derby, the two best horses, put on a great show for us in the Kentucky Derby. And Bob Baffert had even said to me, it didn't feel like the Derby until the gates opened. And then it felt like the Kentucky Derby. I think even without a crowd, even in a unique year, you win a race like the Belmont, the Derby, or the Preakness, you're still going to be really happy. And I'm really proud of your horse, and so I'm looking forward to seeing what happens this weekend. But I think, like everybody, hope things that do go back to normal. But I think in racing, we've made the best of the situation this year, and we have to be adaptable. So I'm proud of our industry for what we've been able to do with the series.
I'm 100% behind you. I've said for the last few months, I think racing out of all the major sports has really done the best in this situation, and you're part of that with America's Day at the Races, which up in New York, you were still down in Florida at the time, but there was the period when Florida was one of the only spots running, and that coverage, I think, got a new fan base, perhaps, that didn't have any other options to look at for that couple-month period in there, and since then, it's kind of proceeded nicely as well, and now you're part of that with the America's Day at the Races team. You've done a great job there as well, but this weekend, down at Pimlico, covering the Preakness, we'll be checking you out on the simulcast signal. Say hello to my friend Dave Rodman down there. We always have fun when we talk to him. But we enjoyed your conversation this morning, and we will catch up again later on.
Absolutely, Seth. Thanks so much, as always.
Appreciate it. Acacia Courtney from Pimlico. So thanks to Acacia Courtney again. We talked with her yesterday. We talked with Ken McPeak yesterday. Appreciate his visit as well. And we were live this morning with Jeremy Plonk covering some Preakness and some Keeneland. Great stakes action coming up later today at Belmont as well. We'll be looking at all of that when I come back. Well, I was going to say a couple hours, usually is, but now with the early start of Pimlico, I'll be back relatively sooner than that. It's an 11 o'clock post time at Pimlico today with the Preakness card. So again, we'll be back in a little while with OTB Live looking at all of that great action, great stakes action. Of course, tomorrow the ARC with Enable, that'll run just at the beginning of Racing Across America tomorrow about 10:05, so we'll have that as well tomorrow. Just great racing, not just across the country but around the globe this weekend. And the Triple Crown, which has been changed up on the calendar, completes today with the Preakness Stakes coming up a little bit later on at Pimlico. So looking forward to that. Today, there is both an online knockout challenge and a knockout challenge here at the Clubhouse Racebook. If you want to come down, watch the Preakness here at the Racebook. Knockout challenge here and online as well. Two different knockout challenges. Keep that in mind. Check out the website for more information. You can also come to the Clubhouse Racebook tomorrow and enjoy racing and football action throughout the NFL season, NFL Sundays here at the Clubhouse Racebook. Don't forget, like every place else right now, you got to wear your mask when you come in and when you get up and walk around. The tables are a little bit distanced now, but we have plenty of room in our large facility. So we'd love to have you come on down and enjoy some racing action and some football action on Sundays throughout the season. And, of course, come on down today and enjoy the Preakness Day card from Pimlico and some Belmont, some Keeneland. Really nice racing today at all the various venues. We will take a look at all of it in just a little while when, again, we come back for OTB Live. Pimlico kicks off at 11 a.m., so we had an early start today, and I'll wrap it up because they are in the pregame currently for Pimlico. So we'll catch you up there and let you hear some of the comments from the folks down at Pimlico on that great card that they have. So, again, I'm going to wrap it up for Racing Across America on this Saturday morning. I'm Seth Merrill. Thanks for joining us. Again, we'll see you in an hour or so as we kick off an early edition of OTB Live on Preakness Day. See you then.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.